You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Now, just in case you may be heading towards Letterkenny University Hospital, I presume the situation is pretty dire down there today, as it was last evening. When we got an update from the hospital, there were 23 sick patients who were waiting for a bed on the hospital. Every single bed in that hospital was in use at that time. And we were being told that people attending with non-urgent issues facing very, very long wait times. And we were also contacted, or I was contacted, by a lot of people who were down there for a very long time as well. As a result of the overcrowding, some elective procedures were postponed. Some of that can be, you know, really quite important operations, of course. Elective procedure makes it sound like maybe it's a ingrown toenail or something, but a lot of it is more severe than that. But if you had an elective procedure cancelled, I think the hospital were contacting you directly. And as is always the case, urgent cases in the ED were being seen to first. So I'll read what they said, just in case you missed the news last evening, because, as I say, it's still a pertinent story today. The ED at Letterkenny University Hospital, extremely busy with high numbers of people attending the department who need to be admitted to the hospital for ongoing treatment. Now, this puts to bed the sort of situation that people are turning up to the hospital that don't need to be there. The bottom line is a large number of people attending the department who need to be admitted to hospital. On Monday, 186 people attended the ED, and the hospital saw a similar number on Tuesday, 113 patients in the ED, and 23 of those waiting to be admitted to the hospital. So the hospital was asking people not to attend for routine or non-urgent treatments, because if you do, you'll experience very long waiting times. But obviously, there are there's different access to GP dependent on where you are, and for some the only choice is to go to the ED. But I just know some people blaming people for turning up that shouldn't be there. The reality is it's full of people that are very sick, and 23 of them couldn't get a bed yesterday. They talked of pressure on the site and the lack of bed capacity themselves. You know, so sometimes I think you know, people think we're being overly negative or too much of a focus in the hospital, but in their own words, the HSC say they've got pressures on site and they've got a lack of beds, and it's chaos down in the ED. I'm not sure if it's eased this morning, but that was the update late last night. And as always, lots and lots of you commenting on our social media, my social media too. Sinead said at the time, sitting here now, I've never saw it so busy, and we certainly wouldn't be here if it wasn't necessary. Believe me, there's nowhere to sit. It's full to the overspill. There needs to be a minor injuries separate at this time. Francis said, nothing new there. The hospital really is not coping, and why? That it needs to be addressed and sorted. It's not fair on the patients, and it's awful for those who now have to wait for their hospital appointments. God help anyone who needs medical care in Donegal, she said. Christina pointed out, there's no excuse for this. I was in Spain last year, hurt my knee, went to hospital, triaged literally within 5 minutes, seen by a doctor, sent to x-ray, back from x-ray with the result, sent to a doctor, second consultation with him, sent to a nurse, discharged with meds, 2 hours in total. I know in Inishowen, says one contributor, if you ring now, doc, they tell you to take them on to the hospital, send an ambulance for you. You don't even see the Now Doc clinic. Another caller says, interestingly, actually, because for much of the south of the county, Sligo University Hospital is as close as Letterkenny University Hospital. And one caller's experience here, I'll get to that in a moment. Anyway, they went down to Sligo University Hospital instead, and they had a much speedier experience there. Right, okay, so that's just a sense of what's going on. The HSE themselves released that information last night. Lots of you commenting that the hospital and the HSE is a shambles. Others pointing out that they believe it's not big enough. Lizzie said a new surgical ward is needed. Donna said, I witnessed this last night. I was in with my wee boy, and the poor staff run off their feet. It's simply not fair. And on it goes. If you're down there now, let us know what it's at. But I think if you can avoid going to the hospital, do. But if you need to go to the hospital, go. Do you get me? You will be prioritised. You will be seen. I don't want anyone with chest pains or a headache that's not going, sitting at home going, I'm not going down there. Go to the hospital. You will be prioritised and you will be seen. But If you've a twisted knee or something else, you could be facing a very long wait. Now, we're so excited for Friday because we have our open day here at Highland Radio and we're inviting you up to come up. No sandwiches, I'm told, but tea, scones, tray bakes. I think that's scones. I haven't a clue. Tea, coffee and conversation, and to meet some of the presenters. Hopefully most of the presenters will be here. Obviously, we've had daytime presenters and our weekend and nighttime presenters calling in. And as part of our birthday celebrations, we've got this fantastic cash draw that's running. We're giving you 9 chances to win €1,000 for just a tenner. So from 11 o'clock or thereabouts on Friday, we'll have our first draw and then draws every hour for the following 9 hours. So that's great, isn't it? €10, price of a couple of coffees, €10, and you could win €1,000 heading into St. Patrick's weekend. You'll have 9 chances if you buy your tickets right now. But here comes the good bit. You have a great chance of winning. And you're also going to be supporting 3 great charities, Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. You know the great work they do, don't they? Don't you? We're talking about hospital services and access to treatment. They help people who require treatment in Dublin, Galway, etc. to get there, be it through the fantastic Donegal Airport or other ways. They've got great groups of volunteers and they're brilliant. And they rely solely on your generosity. So you buy a ticket, let's just say €3.33 going to them. The Blue Stack Special Needs Foundation do amazing work with young people, young adults, in maximising their potentials and getting them into the working environment and all that kind of stuff. Fantastic. €3.33 would go to them if you bought a ticket today. And Huey's Corner, they do fantastic work as well in providing supports and counselling for young people often who've gone through big, big changes in their life, be it bereavement or illness or whatever it might be. They are there because those services weren't specifically there before they were established. So that's where your €10 would go. But as I say, you can win €1,000. You have 9 chances over the course of Friday. So do your thing, have a bit of fun, and also maybe you can win and support these 3 great charities. Get your tickets right now because we have the capability to process your calls. And that means then you can just sit back and listen to the great shows we've got for you on Friday. We've got just the cream of the crop of music coming onto this show and conversation. We're going to be chatting to Daniel O'Donnell and others as well. It's going to be lovely for 3 hours. I think Gooch is going to hang around for a bit. Sean Quinn will be in. We've got the auction that's running as well. I'll talk about that a little later on. But anyway, you can just buy your ticket now and then sit back and see if you win every hour. Will your number come out? You don't have to answer your phone. You don't have to. There's no 5 rings. There's no anything like that there. Your ticket is your number and your number is your name, and you win as soon as your ticket comes out. So how do you buy a ticket? Just €10 or as many as you wish to buy well within your means. I don't want you losing, you know, out money that you need for this. But anyway, if you've got money to spare to support these charities, €10 ticket. HighlandRadio.com. Fully safe, fully secure. You can buy your tickets there. Your number will be emailed out to you. But if that's not your thing, give us a call here, 07491 25000, 07491 25000. We'll process your ticket and give you your number. Or if you want to call up with cash, we're here at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. We'd be more than happy to help. We really would love to be able, on behalf of the Highland Radio family, not just us, not Sean Quinn, not Greg Hughes, not Carolyn Orr, but on behalf of all of us as a big family here across the Northwest and beyond, to give a great amount of money to these 3 great charities. And it's all to celebrate 35 years on air. And a big thank you to so many of you who've been here from day dot. And we wouldn't be here if you're not there. So it's brilliant. And that's a celebration. That's what, for me, Friday's about. It's about you guys that keep us on air, really, and the support of the businesses. We don't get to any great extent state funding or license fee payers. This is all done off a relationship between us, the businesses, listeners, and all around. Okay, so be generous if you don't mind. 07491 25000 if you want to buy them over the phone. Onto our website, safe and secure, highlandradio.com. And just as I say, are really optimistic we're going to have a great day on Friday and be able to donate greatly to these 3 great charities. And it's all thanks to you guys. Okay, let us take a break. I didn't get to some comments there because I just wanted to mention those couple of things. But I will, and much more besides, over the course of the next hour and 40 minutes. I'm in studio now with Dr. Emmett Johnston, Regional Manager at Glenveagh National Park. Thanks so much, Emmett, for calling in. How are you keeping?
Very good, Greg. Great to be on the show. And thanks for the opportunity to speak to yourself and your listeners this morning.
It must be a pleasure heading into work. I'm not belittling the work that you do and the toughness and all that stuff, but it must be a pleasure going into work to Glenveagh You know, you had the fantastic Santa experience at Christmas, and it's an opportunity to educate as well and bring particularly young people, I suppose, engage them with nature and what have you. We're heading into the summer period as well. The stuff all year round in the park, its face changes throughout the year, and it just must be a nice space.
It is a beautiful place, and it's not just about nature, it's got cultural heritage as well. And you know, something that's really struck me, I just started in August as the manager there, is the sense of family and community in Glenveagh. It's the heart of Donegal, and it's a great location for local communities to come and just exercise, enjoy nature, experience their own culture. And we're very proud of it, and I'm very proud of the team there. They recently won the award for best hospitality location in Donegal. And they do a great job given the resources that we have to play with.
Yeah, and I would encourage anyone who hasn't visited to visit. I'm a relatively recent adopter, but you're quite right. You know, from the staff that are in the centre, as you go in the visitor centre, I don't know what you'd describe it as, right? Particularly the bus staff, a lovely group of lads and ladies. I've only encountered the lads. I'm not sure if there's any women. But, you know, right across the board, you get a sense that they're either very great actors or they all really enjoy their work.
It's all genuine.
I suppose it depends on the day.
100% genuine. I suppose in July and August, things get very busy. Mm. And we can put a lot of people through the park in a single day. This time of year, things are a little bit quieter. But as you say, you know, we've a nature education team who really work very well with the schools and local community groups, right through to the visitor centre, where we have our visitor services, the castle, and the ranger team as well.
How important is Glenveagh National Park? We're going to talk about the public consultation that's upcoming, but I want to learn some stuff maybe we don't know. So I suppose in terms of the historic heritage nature, we know that. But in terms of sort of the importance of Glenveagh, why is it so important?
I suppose the concept of a national park is an international idea that we've adopted from America. And that comes from over 100 years ago. And it's a really nice, it's kind of a constitutional republican idea where land that was held by private individuals, and in the case of Glenveagh, it was Henry McIlhenny, and the state bought the lands from him and made them available or open to the public. So it's a public space. We have 8 national parks in Ireland now, and they're there as a kind of an enduring location or space for nature, and where people can go and enjoy nature and be in the outdoors. So we're really lucky to have one in Donegal. It's not just like a Donegal thing or a regional thing, it's of international significance, particularly on the nature conservation side.
And in terms of nature conservation, does it have to be reflective of, you know, what is should naturally be there? I'm thinking maybe plant life or trees, or are there or animals that disrupt the ecosystem?
That's a really good question.
Thank you.
I think...
Normally I don't say thank you, but you know, I feel like saying thank you today.
It's a great question, and it gets to the heart of Glenveagh and the process of renewal that we're looking to start. And really, Glenveagh is kind of like an onion. So what we have in the wider Derryveigh Mountains is a special area conservation, and that's a Natura 2000 or European kind of heritage area. And there's a whole network of them across Europe. Half of that is made up by state-owned lands, which is the national park designation. And then within that, we have gardens, which are a fantastic entity in and of themselves, and then the castle at the heart of that. So it has all these layers to itself, nature and cultural. And I suppose trying to balance how we manage those things that can conflict with each other. Mm-hmm. So the landscape is the way it is because of farming. And then it switched to a hunting estate for over 100 years with a deer herd there that was really for the pleasure of a few aristocrats who would come and visit in the autumn time to go and shoot deer or shoot grouse. We've moved away from that model, and we're looking to kind of renew and restore the landscape with more trees. And that means reducing the deer herd and trying to find a different balance between the different, let's say, competing interests in the landscape.
Yeah, because I'm not saying that the deer population are predatory, right? But their impact and their presence in uncontrolled numbers is going to have an impact on the surroundings.
Of course, and it's not to say we don't. We're trying to eliminate deer from the landscape. We're certainly trying to reduce them to allow the native woodland and trees to regenerate. So we'll have more trees in the landscape effectively. Ireland has a very small amount of native woodland in its landscape compared to our European neighbours. Mm-hmm. And Glenveagh hosts some of the oldest, it's ancient woodland. So it's been there continuously since the last ice age. So it's very important. It's what we call kind of temperate rainforest. It's a really important habitat for all sorts of, you know, variety of species.
How were you impacted by the storm Eowyn? And I suppose maybe the aggregate of damage that culminated in that storm?
Yeah, unfortunately we had a lot of damage, certainly in the gardens, and that work is ongoing, and Sean, the head gardener there, is working, and his team are working really hard to get the rest of the gardens open, but some parts of the gardens are still closed. And we had some damage in conifer plantations that are up around the visitor centre. And part of our woodland strategy is actually to remove
them.
They're
not really supposed to be there, are they? They're
planted on deep peat, and they shouldn't really be in that environment. So we're in the process of removing them and replanting where it's appropriate with native trees that we've collected the seed locally and grown on in our nursery. And some areas we won't replant because it should remain as open habitat.
Yeah, and so... would there be a plan to remove all non-native trees over time?
Well, over time, we have adopted a woodland strategy.
Because you can't think about this in 3 months.
No.
Your work is what you leave maybe the fourth person down. They maintain sort of the ideas that you and your team are doing now to some extent.
Exactly. I mean, that's something
like it's an important contribution.
Exactly. Yeah. That's something that I suppose it's hard for some people to get their head around is the national park concept is an enduring thing that passes from generation to generation. And we're working in an inherited space. It's 50 years this year, 1975 it was first established. And the woodland strategy that we've adopted has a 100-year vision. Mm. So I'll get 20 years maybe if I'm lucky involved in that. But the next generation then will take on the next phase and the next steps. And our vision over the longer term is to reduce and remove the non-native species and replace them with native species that we've grown on site.
So there is a public consultation on a new draft Glenveagh National Park Visitor Experience Development and Management Plan. And it starts this coming Friday and runs until April 25th. So what's up for grabs? Well, do you know what I mean? Like,
what's this about? Yeah. So it is a bit of a mouthful, the title. This is a partnership that we've developed with Faolte Ireland, and really it's focused on the visitor experience. So what do people see? What do they do when they're in the park? How is that marketed?
I think about a signpost to the entrance.
Yeah, exactly, right. From which
entrance do we use? And can I have a big in this way sign? Because I'm kind of thick.
From the moment you engage with us on our website, let's say, right through to when you're in the park and what you do there. The park, you know, infrastructure was built in the early 80s and was really of its time, designed around coach tours. People arrive to do a 15-minute video. They go on the bus up to the castle. They do their tour, potentially walk around the gardens, get back on the bus and they leave. The tourist nowadays is very different. They want a much more, engaged experience.
And also, too, you don't want a sense of one and done either. So that I landed there, walked around the centre, I got the bus, saw the castle and then left. And then I won't go back there for another 4 or 5 years or until someone comes visiting from America.
Exactly. And we want people to have more dwell time and more options for them, certainly more outdoor options and more engagement with nature. So this is really a consultation about how are we going to reorientate the infrastructure of the park.
And what scope is there there for that? I mean, you know, I think most people would walk the road that's there. Is there an option for... Yeah. More trails or...
Yeah, that's exactly what we're looking at. More trails, maybe pushing people into other areas further up the glen, more interpretation. We're looking at potentially a new visitor centre, more parking, looking at different ways of getting people to the park, maybe that they don't always use their car, public transport, and linking other trails out to neighbouring communities, Churchill, Doohery, Fintown, Dunluey.
Yeah, that really seems to be the capacity for growth there, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah.
I get you. And It's very important, of course, because of the sort of the whole concept of this, is that the public feel they have a hand on the tiller to some extent here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a genuine consultation. It's not something that's set in stone. So this plan has been developed over a number of years, and we had a kind of a stalled period because of COVID. It's at the stage it's at now, and this is our first engagement with the public and stakeholders, and we are genuinely interested to hear their views, and there will be substantive changes made to it depending on what information and views we get in. And then we're going to go back out to the public again with a more polished plan, and at that stage we'll be really just looking at what are the any issues or constraints, because there's a lot of planning regulations around making changes in a kind of sensitive location like Glenveagh.
Is there any more potential for the castle, do you think?
There is. I mean, there's plans there to expand, part of the visitor experience within the castle, which we're moving towards a museum accreditation now, and also expanding the offering of food and beverages and I suppose shops and things like that.
What do you think, what kind of stuff might the museum house?
Well, we'd like to have a nice display exhibits there. There's going to be an A.E. Russell exhibit opening on Saturday, actually the 15th, for 2 weeks. And that's our first kind of dip of our toe in the water with regard to mobile or travelling exhibits. But certainly we'd like to have a nice exhibit space in the castle that would reflect the history of the castle and the people who used it.
But also could have unrelated visiting pieces as well, because it's another reason to go there.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there any capacity to avail of the beautiful waters that are in the area from a visitor? I'm not talking about paddle boats or whatever, but I mean, like, you know, I feel like you've got the structures, you've got the land, and then you've got this great expanse of water.
We have the lake. The fisheries is managed in partnership with Inland Fisheries Ireland, and people have a permit and they can go and fly fish there for salmon
that's
and
trout.
Already
up and going, right?
So that's a really it's quite a niche, but it is a very kind of Highland experience. Mm. Let's say that people come to Glenveagh to do, and people will travel from all over.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, to stand on the banks of that lake with a fly rod in your hand, I could do 8 hours of that, no problem. I've never seen anything that can pass time like fishing. It's really, especially for someone like me who's so highly strung, it's remarkable. So, I mean, this is one of those conversations, Emmett, whereby it's a public consultation, right? So you don't want to come across as you're trying to impose your vision, which we know you're not, right?
Yeah.
But also, too, I think sometimes when you give suggestions, it kind of come across like you're narrowing the focus for the public consultation. That is not what we're going to do. But I do want to sort of maybe... Is there anything that we haven't touched on in terms of potential that you believe the park could go in, if that makes sense? I know we've actually probably talked on a lot of it in terms of trails and stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some outstanding or unresolved question marks around really the castle space and that garden space, because it's quite tight and... it's a bottleneck really for people and how we move them around, and facilities for staff working. They're working in the space where all the tourists are as well. So that's a little bit unresolved, and really expanding the offering in the castle as well. But we're open to ideas, and I think we're civil servants. We work in the civil service, and we can be very conservative.
Love civil servants, right? So, but we were having this beautiful nature. You're in your lovely park warden outfit. Now we're talking about civil servants. What's going on here? We're going
we welcome new and creative ideas, and we are open genuinely to input from people.
By coincidence, a caller says, would Glenveagh make use of the lake? Would be lovely to see a boat ride there. I'm not sure about the because you certainly wouldn't want to go dredging or anything like that there, but I can imagine, you know, a 30-minute trundle up the lake and down the lake would be just to see, because it gives you an opportunity to see the space from a different perspective.
And that's
stick
a good
it in
idea.
The public consultation,
put it in the public consultation and submit it, and we'll consider it and have a look at it.
Spent 6 years in Glenveagh on Sunday and was lucky to spot two eagles at the Glen. Was thinking on my way down a water bus like the one in Donegal Town on the lakes, taking visitors from visitor centre out to the waterfall and back would be great, and then onto Muckish to go up with the cable car, right? Okay, that's quite exciting. But yeah, the water did stand out to me as the listeners seem to be thinking them saying.
Underutilised resource, yes. And I suppose everything that we do needs to be within the boundaries or the constraints of ensuring that we don't do any adverse kind of 100%. Impacts on nature.
Yeah, exactly.
But listen, good ideas, send them in, please, and we'll have a look at them.
Yeah, and as you said earlier on, to reiterate, no harm, but sometimes public consultations are part of a process, and maybe sometimes decisions are fait accompli. Okay, I'm just saying right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think the impression I'm getting from you, Emmett, is this actually, you know, we want the public to have their 100%. Say. We're interested in all the ideas, what's doable, what's not doable, so that the population's fingerprints are all over that. Is this facility availed of enough by schools? I mean, obviously, I don't know. Maybe the schools are never out of the place.
I mean, we have Claire, as head of the nature education team, has been engaging with a number of youths and youth groups, and we're hoping to have kind of specific consultation with young people around what they would see as a vision for the park. And, you know, over time, we want to develop a stronger link with young people, because as an enduring concept, the park is really there for the next generation. Yeah. And I think their involvement, and they have, you know, fresh ideas.
I'd love to see some transition year projects focusing on Glenveagh.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I think that's always a really good, I always find that's a great indication of what's interesting the young people, because we often talk about them and down to them and not to them. So it'd be lovely to see next year or the year after, you know,
ultimately, we'd like to have like a youth ranger program and engaging with the schools at transition year. We already do a lot of that, and
of course
do great
you do,
work. Given
but it's another potential area of growth.
Yes, exactly.
Everything that can be done is being done. It's how can it be done better or improved or to widen it out. So how do people then engage with this process and have their says? And I'm speaking to the two listeners who text in us great ideas. You have not taken part in the public consultation, folks. You need to actually do it formally, because they're lovely ideas, and that's exactly what Emmett and his team are looking for. So how do people submit notions?
So we're opening on Friday, the consultation, and it'll be open until the 25th of April. And if they want to come along on Saturday, Saturday the 15th, and on Saturday the 29th as well of March, we're having two drop-in days where there'll be live presentation by the consultants who we had to draft the plan. I'd like to reiterate that it's concepts that we're putting out as opposed to a fait accompli.
Yeah, of course.
We're looking for a genuine consultation. They can also go on our website. And on our website, there'll be a link to the department's location where you can submit your
And I also say this with public consultations, you don't have to be a lyricist or a poet or an author. Write down what you think in your words and how you want to say it. It doesn't matter, because we all have different ways of communicating and abilities in terms of communicating and what have you. Just write down what you think.
A good idea is a good idea.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't need punctuation. Emmett is a legend, giving his highlighting of the basking sharks here. Can he fix the midges problem in Glenveagh? Midges are part of
nature,
the part of the infrastructure, aren't they? What's the background with basking sharks?
I suppose when I worked as a ranger previously to this role, I was in Inishowen, and I was involved in setting up a conservation group around basking sharks, and we, you know, lobbied for a long time, done a lot of research, and in the end, we got the basking sharks protected under Irish legislation, and it was a great win for nature and for the Donegal coast.
In terms of basking sharks, do they come in and out of our waters seasonally? Are they ever present?
Yes, it's a good question.
Thank you.
We discovered and were able to prove using kind of more modern techniques that they do stay here during the winter sometimes, but they also travel widely down through the tropics and into southern Atlantic and to America as well. We tracked some sharks. So they mostly come here during the summer months, April through to September. That's when they spend more time on the surface. But during the winter, they go into deeper waters, but they can hang around in the winter. They're just not on the surface, so we don't see them.
And do they populate particular parts of our coast?
Yeah, so we have five or six hotspots around the coast of Ireland, and actually they are the top hotspots in the world that species.
Ish.
So Malinhead, across the Tory Island or Donegal coast is one. You have Achill on the Mayo coast. Clare as well is one. And then you have down at the Dingle Peninsula, the Blasket Islands area, and then around at Cork.
And so how big are they? What length?
Huge. The size of a bus. So 9 or 10 metres long.
Unbelievable.
So one of the buses we have in Glenveagh. It's very hard to describe when you interact with the Basking Shark or a whale. It's effectively meeting a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of inspirational.
How big are their mouths?
Well, there's all these analogies, you know, like a jet engine. Well, I suppose a meter and a half.
It's so funny when you say it, because people go, and the British are obsessed with comparing things to the size of buses, red buses, right? And I'm like, well, how big's a red bus?
Yeah,
it's something I know.
You're trying to get a reference,
but they're big, and they is it plankton that they feed on? Particularly?
Yeah, they feed on plankton,
so they just filter it, really, do they?
Like the midges in the sea.
Yeah,
so they're feeding on plankton.
But how could something get to that scale? I mean, obviously, it's how much plankton they process and eat, but to think that something could get to that scale.
Yeah, they live off soup, and I suppose they don't use a massive amount of energy. They're very efficient animals in how they move and how they feed. But we do get huge plankton blooms off the coast, particularly at Malin Head.
Which is why we see them there, isn't it? And how often might they surface?
Depending on the conditions. So when it's sunny and calm, they spend a much higher proportion of their time on the surface.
So they kind of sunbathe effectively.
Yeah, effectively. So the Basking Shark, the name, I suppose the hint is in the name, but they used to be also called in Ireland sunfish, but it was changed to Basking Shark because there's another sunfish, the Mulla Mulla.
So if I was on heading to Tory, for an example, on the boat or off Malin, and it was on the surface, how much of it might you see on the surface?
Typically, you just see the fin, which would be like the chair you're sitting in, size sticking out of the water. You might see the snout or the nose. You have to get quite close because the light reflects off the water to see the entire body.
Mm.
But people do snorkel or kayak with them.
Are they curious?
Yeah,
they dolphins, for example, that you know, they have a curiosity to them, or they'd be particularly defensive. Like if I paddled my kayak and engaged its fin, is it likely to kick off or drop?
It might. I mean, they're not curious like dolphins in the way they would interact with you. But if you're in a boat, they might follow the kind of the wake of the boat. But certainly there's a kind of a protocol and a recommended way of interacting with them, and you keep a certain distance. Touching them, typically they'll react in fright and dive, and they can kind of slash their tail.
Of course, so in an effort to get down.
I wouldn't recommend it.
And do they swim alone?
Well, we typically see them in groups because we're in an area where there's a lot of food.
Right. So they're not necessarily socializing. It's just they're drawn to the same.
That's an
food
unknown.
Source.
So that's something that still is yet to be proven. Are they a solitary animal? Do they stay together and migrate together? And where are the breeding grounds? So they're outstanding questions.
Yeah, and an outstanding question actually, just finally before I let you go, in relation to Glenveagh National Park, it's the balance between it being a public attraction and access to the public, and also maintaining it as what it is. Is a caller says, the more people, the less wildlife. The park is not there to make money, but to preserve wildlife. It's also there, though, for us. It is a national park as well, and we have to strike a balance, in my view, and we'll get Emmett's view on this, whereby we don't interfere with the wildlife, but we can actually step into it and enjoy it, because it is almost one of the last oases. This is why we can't have wolves anymore, because there simply is not the infrastructure, trees, freedom for them. This is what we have, and we need to be able to access it. But that's the whole thing. It's striking the balance between the us being able to engage and experience it. But I mean, if we weren't doing what we were doing to preserve it, it wouldn't be there. So
circles? It serves the purpose, and the purpose is to preserve nature and protect nature, but also to allow people to facilitate people to enjoy and experience that. We have 17,500 hectares in Glenveagh National Park, most people come, they visit the valley, which is about 2,000 hectares, mm-hmm. and that's what they see and experience at Glenveagh. We have lots of zones where we don't intervene, so the park is well set up.
And now
up
a lot of electric
buses,
so it's not like steaming up and down from the castle that you're all the time pumping fumes out, and you know, it's all that kind of thing.
We're well set up in a way to focus the vast majority of the people in a small area within the park, and that's what we're looking at.
That's the payoff as well to maintain the whole thing. Bigger, which is bigger, sperm whale or a basking shark?
Oh, the sperm whale.
And are they around here as well?
Not really. They're in deeper water, but we do get them washed up when they've been, potentially they've died out at sea and they wash up on the coast here in Dublin.
Or they've been completely mind melted by sonar from submarines. Who is to say? Yeah. Okay, Emmett, listen, thank you very much indeed. That's Dr. Emmett Johnston, Regional Manager at Glenveagh National Park. The purpose of our conversation is to encourage you to engage in the new draft Glenveagh National Park Visitor Experience Development and Management Plan. It's open on the 14th of March, and you're really being encouraged as an individual or as a community to make your written submissions or observations. More information on the website, which is at...
If they go to the Glenveagh National Park website.
Couldn't be easier. Okay, and if you text us in, brilliant ideas, also message that in. And that also can be like our texter that is concerned about the balance of visitors.
Course,
that
of
is
course.
Also part of the
Very
future.
Valid
so
point.
Don't feel that because maybe your opinion might come across as negative that it's not a valid opinion. By the way, just to make sure that listener feels heard. Thanks, Emmett. Back after these. I want to say good morning now to Dr. Deirdre Mungan, who's Research Officer at the Health Research Board. Good morning, Deirdre. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
Right. Now, we're talking about a survey. Is it a survey or a study of Irish 20-year-olds who experienced conflict between their parents in childhood and the impact that might have on them? Was this specific age cohort selected for a reason, Doctor?
Yes. No problem. I'll just give you a bit of a background into this study. So this analysis is part of a wider study being undertaken by the Health Research Board and Trinity College. And we're looking to discover or explore the factors associated with drug use and alcohol use. So we use the data from the Growing Up in Ireland study, and this is a large study of children which started back in 2008 when over 8,000 children aged 9 were recruited. These children were then revisited at the age of 13, 17 and then at 20. So when the children were aged 9, 13 and 17, either themselves or their parents answered questions on a range of what we would call adverse childhood experiences that they may have experienced. And then when they were at age 20, we looked at their drug use behaviour and their alcohol use behaviour to see was there any relationship between those children who had experienced adverse experiences as a child. And when we talk about adverse experiences, these include things such as experiencing the death of a parent, having conflict between parents, having somebody who uses drugs or has alcoholism in the immediate family, living with somebody who has mental health disorder, being taken into foster care, having a parent in prison. So a range of different experiences which can have an adverse effect on a child throughout their childhood and also into adulthood as well.
Okay, I hope it's not a controversial question in this context, but does this take into account, you know, nature versus nurture, that maybe genetically maybe we might be inclined to follow certain behavioural traits of our parents, or the impact of seeing it having a negative impact on us as we strike the 20s?
Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting question, and it's this field of study has really really taken off internationally in the last 10 years. And what we are seeing is that children who do experience, you know, negative experiences as a child, this can have irreversible effects on their body system. So there's a lot of research to show that this can affect their immune system, endocrine system. It can affect their neurodevelopment and cause changes in their brain. It can also impact a person's coping strategy so that they, you know, develop, I suppose, adaptive coping strategies and may use drugs and alcohol to cope with their life's problems rather than using, you know, healthier strategies. So I think what the data is showing is that it's probably both, that these experiences actually cause changes in their bodies, which do then lead on to negative outcomes as an adult. And yes, a lot of, you know, it is difficult to disentangle what exactly is nature and what is nurture, you know, from a study like this.
How do we support children in these situations? Because it's very difficult. We can't make them immune to what's going on in the household unless we take them from their parents, and that in often cases, I think the best place for a child is with their parents. So what can we do to ensure the latest group of children that maybe are living their lives like this have the best chances of their own positive life?
Okay, so as part of the study as well, we looked, as well as trying to measure the extent of adverse experiences among children, we also looked to see if among those children that did go through these experiences, whether things such as having positive family relationships, positive peer relationships and school engagement, whether this had any impact on, you know, their drug use and alcohol as an adult. And what we've found is that they do to a certain extent. So a child who does go through these type of events, if they have positive parental relationships, particularly close relationships with their father, and they are engaged at school and they have friends, it can buffer to a certain extent, but it's very difficult to undo the potential damage that, you know, that from experiencing these type of events. I suppose what we found in this study as well, that the type of experiences that were put children most at risk of problem drug use or problem alcohol use as an adult was living in a household where there was drug taking or alcoholism. And the second one was mental disorder in the immediate family. And the third one was conflict between parents. Yeah. And I suppose what that's showing as well is that if a child is living in a household where there is a person with, you know, drug taking or alcoholism or a mental health disorder, that I suppose firstly it's important that the family member gets the treatment that they need in order to deal with their issues, and also that the child is part of this program as well, so that the child isn't forgotten about and they're, you know, their needs are catered for.
For sure, and I would say often, too, all three are present. And I just think too, I think sometimes we can give up on people very quickly. I think I would love to see, and this sounds fanciful, us as a society understanding maybe if someone's going through difficult times as a young adult, why they are. We're very quick to judge and throw words out and throw them away as if they're disposable, right? But if we all maybe... They say it takes a community to raise a child. I think if we all maybe could understand this a little bit better, it could also be part of a solution.
Absolutely. And, you know, we do find that there can be a lot of stigma around, you know, drug taking and particularly people who have drug problems. And we know from other research we've done in Ireland that women, particularly mothers who have drug problems, there's a reluctance to get treatment to deal with that problem because they're, you know, afraid of, because of the stigma that is attached to that, and that may be preventing them getting the help they need, and that would actually minimise the likelihood of their child developing these problems themselves in adulthood, and, you know, breaking that cycle from one generation to the next. So it is important that if people are having problems, be it to their mental health, be it their drug use, that they're supported to, you know, to get through this and to try and become drug free, try to recover from their mental health problems. And this will help the next generation, and that will help the children who are living in those situations.
Okay. And finally, this kind of study is really important, and it's great that it's been published, but it's very useful information, hopefully, to inform or help form policy or policy changes.
Yes. And I think what our research has clearly shown is that those children who are experiencing multiple negative experiences, they're the ones that are at high risk, and it's important that these are identified and supported. And, you know, we hope, you know, the role we have in the Health Research Board is to provide the evidence, and we hope this can then now inform, you know, policymakers to develop, you know, programmes in order to reduce the likelihood of these children going on to develop problem drug use or alcohol problems in adulthood.
Dr. Deirdre Mungan, Research Officer at Health Research Board, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Have a lovely day. Back after these with the news.